On today's episode of The Good Word, J.A. Adande joins us to discuss what it feels like to be a Hall of Famer, his all-time Lakers Mount Rushmore, and if LeBron is there. And we wonder if the Boston Celtics have actually broken the NBA. All that and much more coming up right now. Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports and the host of this show. Today, we are joined by a Hall of Famer. He is a good friend of mine, a great friend of the program. I feel like I should introduce J.A. Adande every time I see him and talk to him as Hall of Famer J.A. Adande, who was just inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame with the Kurt Gowdy Award. That is pretty high company. J.A., how you doing, man?
I'm great, man. I'm still on that cloud from it. It just, that eternal perk of having Hall of Famer attached to your name. Vince Carter talked about it in his speech, and I've definitely felt that, man. I got a birthday greeting from James Worthy, who dressed me as Hall of Famer on Facebook, and I said, thank you, Hall of Famer. Like, it's really cool to be in that, on that tier.
You know? Yep.
Like, I think I texted you about how at that Friday night dinner, I said there were 8 Hall of Famers at the table, including me.
No, you texted me about the Hall of Famers at the dinner, and then you said the night couldn't be better because Stevie Wonder's Ass was playing, which we both agree, greatest song of all time. And like, I can imagine being a Hall of Famer the night before you go in and you're at this dinner with all the Lakers. It almost felt like they were there for you. They were there for Michael Cooper, but that was the team of your era before you started covering them. That was the team of your youth as someone who grew up in LA. Like, I can imagine what that weekend felt like for you with all of those guys being there.
It was so perfect. It made up for, you know, my people, yourself included, who couldn't be there. You know, like, what was it, everyone that I wanted to be there in terms of, you know, all the people that have supported me and built me up and shared with me and have all these memories with me. Like, it kind of didn't even come close to that. But I took care of that in part. I did a party in L.A. for a lot of my L.A. folks, including my ninth grade English teacher, who I mentioned in my speech. And she was originally supposed to come to the ceremony. I really wanted her there for that so she could get her shine in that room and at that moment. But she had a wedding in the family. She couldn't make it. But she told me, hey, just being included in your speech, she said, like, she felt like she won the Oscar for that. So I couldn't have my people there, but I kind of got even better because of the fact that I had Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Dr. J were there. So, like, I can get my people together in a room. I can't get all those people together in a room at the same time. So the fact that they were all there for, you know, my pinnacle moments makes it even better because they were the inspiration. You know, I had these dudes' posters on my walls, so many of them.
Yeah.
And to have them in the room looking up at me on the stage as I delivered my Hall of Fame speech, man, that's something that I couldn't have even imagined would happen.
Well, we're taught always to never be the story, or at least, I don't know what they're teaching for kids now. Let me be perfectly honest with what I see on Twitter and Instagram. But we're taught to never be the story.
And As journalists.
And for that day, for those few days for you, J.A., like 3 decades of Hall of Fame work, you know, culminating there. Like, it was just a fascinating thing to watch. I'm disappointed that I couldn't be there. Like, we were talking all through the weekend. Like, I was really disappointed I couldn't be there. I was there last year when Spears got in. So I was able to see it for the first time and get a chance to feel like the Hall of Fame stuff for the first time. It was a really interesting thing, especially now that they've beefed up the Hall of Fame with Jerry Colangelo putting a lot of resources into it. It's still a very secretive process. Very, very hush-hush. I don't know who's involved. I don't know who's voting. Like, I wish there was more transparency. Like, we've had that conversation, you know, a while ago, but it got me to thinking, J.A., because yesterday, and we're going to talk about week one overreactions through the NBA, like, just go across the board, good and bad. But before we get there, and Dwayne Wade had his statue unveiled yesterday in Miami, and that statue got a lot of attention on social media. it looked more like Antoine Walker than it did Dwayne Wade. I'm like, did they get the wrong Chicago guy? You know, they're both from the south side of Chicago. I'm like, did they get the wrong Chicago guy? Like, apparently Dwayne was involved in it, so it wasn't like it was going to be, you know, some big shock to him of the pose. Like, I didn't mind the pose. I'm just trying to figure out who this.
Face. It looked like a zombie show or movie on HBO, right? The Last of Us or something, right? Like, it seriously, it looked like an angry zombie was there celebrating.
But he likes it. So maybe that was one of those things that his bride should have handled. Maybe Gabrielle should have been like, you know what? I'm going to take the lead here because you can't be trusted with your own statue. That got me to thinking, J.A., because a lot of people got statues, right? Magic got a statue. Kareem got a statue. Kobe, Shaq. All those guys got a statue. Michael, of course. Michael might have been the first one with a statue. And I feel like that's like, oh, Michael got a statue. Then that means, you know, Magic being Magic. Ha, 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 ha. You know, the Buss family. I think I need a statue since Michael got one. Ha, ha, ha. Like, that's my Magic impersonation. You know, like,
it's even,
you know,
worse than the Showtime HBO show, Magic.
I like that show. Like, me and you differ on that. But I like the HBO Showtime, like, Winning Time. I like that show. But it got me to thinking, Jay, who else do you think deserves a statue? Because there's one big one for me, and then there's a bunch of other dudes.
All right, Steph Curry outside of Chase Center, right?
Yeah,
I think that's a given. Tim Duncan. I mean, to me, it's got to be – not saying that Dwayne doesn't deserve – yeah, I think Dwayne is very entitled to one for that franchise. But I think of those guys that all that time put in with one franchise in particular – it actually reminds me of one of my questions, and I definitely don't think he gets a statue anywhere, but who retires Chris Paul's jersey? Like, he's such a great player, been in the league for so long, but I'm not sure he belongs to any one particular franchise where they retire his jersey.
I think he's a Clipper.
But he'd be the first. Is he the first that you retire?
They'd probably retire Blake Griffin's jersey first, right? Because he's already, retired.
Yeah, Blake kind of, you know, made that team. Like, Chris Paul wouldn't have come there without Blake Griffin.
Right.
So, I mean, Blake did change the trajectory of that team in a lot of ways. I could see them retiring his jersey. Chris Paul, was he there long enough? Did he do enough there to get retired? New Orleans, it ended badly there. You know, I think Phoenix, if they had like won the championship.
J.A., you talk about the Clippers here. You act like the Clippers got some type of long-standing tradition.
They don't, but in a way that makes it even more imperative that they get it right when they finally do retire a jersey. Right? You've been waiting all this time. You better get it right. It better mean something. Like, is Chris Paul a Clipper? Do you think of him? Is he the first that comes to mind when you think of the franchise?
More than any, it's weird because when you think of LeBron James, and it's a different discussion for LeBron, like a more layered, because he's done all the winning, or he's done winning.
LeBron's the opposite. I mean, obviously in Cleveland.
But who does he belong to? You said who does Chris Paul belong to? Who does LeBron belong to?
So the best of LeBron was Miami.
Yes, by far. By far.
Here's the thing. Cleveland is the easiest and most obvious to say he's the best in the history of the franchise, right? Or means the most of the franchise. Like, you can argue that he's been the best player to ever wear the jersey, every jersey he's worn, including L.A., right? You can make that argument. I mean, because you can make the argument that he's the best player to ever play the game. I'm not making that right now, but it's not too hard to make that argument. So even though you can make the argument he's the best player who's ever played in any of the franchises he's been with, like, Cleveland, there's no one else in the discussion.
Right.
Right. I mean, you know, Miami, you got to talk about Dwayne Wade, means more to that franchise.
Right.
You know, Magic and Kareem and Kobe mean more to the Lakers franchise. Will Jerry West go on and on? Right. But in Cleveland, it's LeBron.
And that's funny you bring that up. Oh, stick a pin in that. Don't let me forget this point. Okay. Don't let me forget this point.
All right.
But the statue that I wanted to bring up, because I want to just bring this and close it out. I'm from Detroit. That's all I got to say. I'm from Detroit. That they're
why haven't your Pistons done it? That's the thing. This is not a case of the league, you know, forgetting about the Pistons, overlooking their mini dynasty. They're back to back, getting overshadowed by the Lakers and then the Bulls. Like, this is the Pistons not doing right by their boy Z.
You're right. And I think in part is because they don't own the building. They don't own Little Caesars Arena, which makes it really difficult, which is another thing that you can take, you know, umbrage with. Why would you not be in a building that you own? Okay, cool. Like, they have things outside of their practice facility, which is not terribly far.
Like the Sixers do, right? Like the Sixers do all theirs. It's like a little mini Iverson.
Yeah, the miniature one.
Is that the problem with the Sixers one?
Allen Iverson is actually bigger than his statue, which should never be the case, right?
That's just
not. That's it. Yeah, it's like a figurine. It's like something like an elf on a shelf. You know, it's not actually a statue, right? Scottie Pippen got like a bust in Chicago. There's not a world that should ever exist that Scottie Pippen should have a bust anywhere. And Isaiah Thomas does not have a statue, not just a really big photo. Like, they have a really big mural of Isaiah at the or maybe the northwest entrance of Little Caesars Arena, like holding up the first championship trophy on ring night in 1989. That's cool. That man deserves a statue. I don't want to hear of any other player or any other franchise giving a player a statue before Isaiah Lord Thomas III gets his own statue.
But
period.
You can't talk about different franchises. This is a Pistons and Pistons.
I know, it is. I'm talking to the
Pistons
franchise.
From honoring. Right.
I'm talking to the Pistons.
You can't bring up other players who have statues and say it's unfair because it's whatever.
No, it's just
the statue,
a reminder.
Whatever the franchise deems statue worthy. Just like, you know, for the San Antonio Spurs, they retired Bruce Bowen's jersey because he mattered that much to that franchise. Would he get retired by other places? Not necessarily, but it's the Pistons. It's their jerseys. It's their numbers. They can retire whoever they want. If you got a problem with it, take it directly to the Pistons. You got a problem with Isaiah, no statue, take it to the Pistons.
Oh, best believe I have. Don't you worry. I have, and I will repeatedly do that. Now, the thing I wanted to get to before we go to the break and we go to week one overreactions, you said something about LeBron as Laker. I think we can all agree, J.A., that Magic Johnson is the most important Laker of all time. At least I think so. At least I think we agree on that.
I mean, Jerry West helped establish them. I would argue Magic. I'm not saying it's universal.
I think we land there. I think it's not universal, but I think we land there. I think number two, like you just said, is Jerry West. And I bring up Jerry West, A, because he was honored at the Hall of Fame again, and because I was in L.A. for opening nights for the Lakers
Bronny
and
night.
Clippers, right? Right? I was there for opening nights in both of those places. Bronny night. Funny. Jerry West was honored. Jerry West was honored
in both
by
buildings.
Both of those franchises and both of those buildings. So, honestly, the Clippers did a much better job than the Lakers did. The Lakers, it almost felt a little hollow, to be perfectly honest, that they purport themselves as being the family franchise and we take care of our guys and everything else. And there was such an estrangement between Jerry West and the Lakers. That's the person I was going to say, Jay, is the number two or number 1A. And I think most people who don't know any better, Jay, would say, of course, Kobe Bryant is the greatest Laker of all time or most important Laker of all time. And I don't think it's even close. It's Magic and it's Jerry.
You know, I mean, I also say Jerry Buss, who oversaw, 10, 11 Laker championships. I also think it's Chick Hearn, who popularized the Lakers and the NBA in L.A. Just like, so I did a thing when Fernando Valenzuela passed away. I said the two most significant Los Angeles Dodgers, we know who the most significant Dodger of all time, going back to Brooklyn, but the most significant Los Angeles Dodgers, I say one, Vin Scully, two, Fernando Valenzuela. And, you know, this is not the podcast to go into details on
that. Yeah, no.
I think you can make the arguments. I would say, you know, you could say one, Chick Hearn, for what he meant to the team. There's a great Jim Murray column. I got the collection of his books over my shoulder here talking about, you know, there were like 2,000 people at the sports arena when the Lakers were first playing. They're in the playoffs. They go on the road. Everybody listens to Chick Hearn. They come back for the next playoff game and like the place is packed, right? Because Chick made it seem that exciting. Magic for what he meant. Jerry Buss as the guy who elevated the team and oversaw two dynasties was the common thread between those two dynasties. But yeah, Jerry West, who helped popularize it, who helped glamorize the Lakers in L.A., as a player, and then as an executive, oversaw the 80s dynasty and then brought in Kobe and Shaq to get the next dynasty underway too. So the importance of Jerry West, it's really hard to pick top Laker. But when you go through all that, it also makes it really hard for LeBron to even crack the top four to get onto the Mount Rushmore or to get into the starting five.
Just to get into the discussion. I don't even think he's part of the discussion. And that's no shade to LeBron. That's just how rich the Laker franchise is and how long-standing, how many people are just synonymous with that franchise where LeBron is known for multiple franchises. LeBron is known for Team LeBron.
You know, he's probably, we got to do it. I mean, if I'm ranking my players, he's the greatest player to have ever worn a Laker jersey. But he's not in my top four, top five Lakers, greatest Lakers, right? He's not, to me, he's not even, you know, I have a hard time even getting to the point to talk about him as the greatest Laker. But I can say he's the greatest player to ever wear a Laker jersey.
I would even argue with that and say Irvin.
I mean, I have LeBron above Magic in my all-time ranking.
I get it. No, I think there's a greater case for Magic as second greatest player of all time than we actually say out loud. We just limit him to greatest point guard of all time.
Right.
We keep him there. We limit Magic as if that's limiting, but we limit Irvin as the greatest point guard of all time, and we just keep it there. We don't extend it anywhere. And I'm like, there's a discussion there. I'm not saying he'd win the discussion. I'm saying there's a greater discussion than I think people give him credit for. Now,
it was wild real quick because I was standing within, at one point, you know, I was probably about 10, 15 feet of Magic and Michael Jordan were standing together at the Hall of Fame weekend. And I'm thinking, like, that's my all-time starting backcourt right there. You know, it's wild that, you know, that there they were. And it's, you know, it's funny because, and then Bird wasn't too far away. And I was like, man, not that they were going to, but they could have reenacted that photo of the three of them in Olympic jerseys.
Oh yeah, yeah, like, yeah. You get too close to Michael, it's a foul.
Right. They could have reenacted if they want. Like that was like the magic of the weekend, was the fact that you had the ability to recreate that photo if they had so desired.
No, I think another guy who gets shortchanged in the not GOAT discussion per se, but just in terms of, wait, how good was Larry Bird? The guy won three straight MVPs in the fourth year. Was better than the third, and he didn't win it because Magic won his first MVP in 1987. That's y'all. If y'all been here, y'all know that I go into the crates. Y'all know I stay there. So you're not surprised at any of that. Now, J.A., the first week of the season just ended, or pretty much we're sort of towards the tail end of the season. The season began last Tuesday in Boston on Ring Night and in Los Angeles on Brownie Night, like you said. So because of that, Jay, I feel like I can ask you reaction or overreactions to some of these bold statements that have been provided by producer John, and I guess co-signed by me since I'm saying it. But we're going to start with the Lakers, and I'm going to ask you if it's an overreaction. Have the 3-0 Lakers fixed all of their issues from last season with one single transaction, hiring J.J. Redick?
No. I can't say that. I can say that they have improved and they've gotten better buy-in, most significantly from Anthony Davis, who you know, couldn't seem to wait to throw shade at Darvin Ham last year and can't wait to praise J.J. Redick and what he's meant for the team. How much I agree with him, maybe not so much, but the important thing is that he thinks that way and that he's all in right now. And he feels more confident, and he's certainly playing better. So one thing we can say is we're getting the best of Anthony Davis, and whether or not J.J. Redick has managed to unlock that or not, I'm not sure how much the cause and the attribution is, but we can definitely say this is the Anthony Davis that they need. The reason I'm a little hesitant, I was just looking through the numbers before we started on, the Lakers are giving up 115.3 points per game. Of the teams with a positive point differential so far, that is the highest points allowed per game. So the defense isn't exactly clamping down on opponents. And that's something that, if they don't tighten that up, could come back to bite them. But the other important thing, and I've been thinking about this, I made this statement during the Olympics, that when LeBron doesn't have to be the best player on the team, it frees him up to be the most valuable player on the team. That is, you know, if he doesn't have to handle all the scoring load and bring the ball up the court and get all the rebounds and guard the other team's best player, he can then pick and choose and fill in as needed. And that's what we saw in the Olympics, right? He wasn't necessarily the best, maybe, but he was the most valuable player of the Olympics because he didn't have to carry the load. And Anthony Davis is carrying the load, and we're seeing the value of LeBron James when he can just analyze and see what he needs to do on this particular night and then fill that role. He can be the ultimate role player, you could argue, right? So
that dynamic
is working well, I think. The fact that
Davis
being the best player, we're seeing a more valuable version of LeBron than we've seen with the Lakers recently.
I think, and this will come as a surprise that people are going to say this, I'm using this as a compliment, but I promise you I'm using this as a compliment in the context of what J.A. just said. He's like a Scottie Pippen, where, you know what I mean?
Wow.
And that's not a disrespect.
You just said Scottie Pippen's name in a positive light. Not as a slur, not denigrating anybody. You paid a compliment to LeBron by invoking Scottie Pippen. Did I get that right?
Are you treating me like a hostile witness here? Yes, I just gave LeBron and Scottie Pippen a compliment. Scottie at his best was the ultimate Swiss Army knife. Like, you couldn't ask Scottie to lead the team, per se. Like, that wasn't the best use of his talent, even during the 90s, where you were barely getting up 90 points a game. Like, Scotty's not the guy that you're asking, hey, Scotty, we need 25 to 30 points from you tonight. Like, he could get you there, but you couldn't ask him to do that. LeBron at this stage of his career, going on 40 years old, I don't know how this is continuing to go, right? But it is going, right? So with that being said, Anthony Davis, we've been talking for years, J.A., when is Anthony Davis going to be the guy to take over? When is he going to be the guy that carries the mantle? That this is, you're the hub on offense, you're already the hub on defense, and you're going to be the guy that's the catalyst and the driver of winning. Not just the guy who influences winning, but you're the guy who drives winning. He's now driving winning. Like 34 a night, 11 rebounds, 3.3 assists. That's not a huge number, per se, especially on the team with LeBron James, but you can see that they're using him as a hub on offense. He's playing from the elbows. You got cutters around him. He's seeing the floor better. I don't think he's necessarily a great passer, but I think he can make passes. And then defensively, I saw him basically shut the lane down against Minnesota on opening night, whereas the team defense may not be very strong right now, but where he has on the interior, nobody's coming down there. And I think if nothing else, he can be the most devastating defensive player in the league, not named Victor Wembanyama, for at least another year.
Yeah, and remember early last year, he came out looking like an MVP at the outset, didn't sustain that, but did play in a lot more games, right, than we were used to. So we got the best version of Anthony Davis in the regular season. And then really the only thing he's done wrong in the last two playoffs is get outplayed by Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
No shame in that, right? There's no shade in losing out in your matchup if your matchup is Nikola Jokic. Remember that one defense he played on that Jokic when Jokic went all behind his head doing that three? How was Anthony Davis supposed to play him any better, right? So, if his goal, if you're going to ask him if the necessity to win a championship is for him to outplay Nikola Jokic, I don't think that's happened. But I think there's a world in which he can hold his own or win against, Victor Wembanyama, right? At this stage, I think we can reasonably expect Anthony Davis to get a win against Victor if they play him. What's interesting, Chet Holmgren?
Chet is here.
Chet
Holmgren? We're getting to that later. We are getting to that later. You are going a little further ahead of the program. You're getting ahead of yourself. No, I think Anthony Davis is a fascinating player. I think LeBron at this stage of his career, if he can be the Swiss Army knife, I think that's, like you said, that's the best use for him, because also you don't have to worry about him being tired down the stretch of games and tired down the stretch of seasons if he doesn't have to have all the usage. And I think we've seen LeBron wear down a little bit towards the end of games and seasons, just because it's hard to sustain this stuff. No matter how great of shape you are in and how well you treat your body, the $1 million a year in your body and everything else, no matter how much you do that, your body is your body. Like, Father Time is undefeated, in that level. So if you can take a little bit of the load off of him by running through Anthony Davis, assuming he's healthy, and he played the most games in his career last year. I think it was 76. I'm not sure if we can expect that this year, but we got something there. Now, I'm going to stay in L.A. for overreaction number two for J.A. Adonis.
You're going to stay in L.A. or are you going to go to Inglewood?
Ooh, we're going to Inglewood. That is my bad. We're going up the freeway.
City with its own mayor.
Right. I did not realize that until like a year ago when they took me on a tour and they were telling me all the things that they were doing in Inglewood. I've never been inside the Forum, but now I want to go for a tour.
You've never been inside the Forum?
Never been inside the Forum.
You got to go pay homage, pilgrimage.
I know. I hope they have like the old Laker floor somewhere around there. But anyway, now that the Intuit Dome is opened in Inglewood, the Clippers have finally escaped the shadow of the Los Angeles Lakers. Is that an overreaction?
No, they will always be in the shadow. Like there is nowhere they can go that the shadow doesn't extend. You know, like they went over, they did training camp in Hawaii. Well, guess what? The Lakers been doing that, you know, so the shadow was over there. That's still Laker territory, right? Like you can go halfway across the Pacific Ocean and you're not escaping the shadow of the Lakers for the Clippers. I'm sorry. So that ain't happening. It is nice that they have a home of their own. So ironically, or the way that I think it's going to make the biggest difference is, believe it or not, the road schedule. Because the Clippers had the worst schedule because they were the, you know, tertiary.
They were fourth team in that building?
Well, third during the season, right? So, you know, Lakers, Kings, you know, and then Clippers.
Concerts. That's what I'm like. I feel like concerts,
well, concerts had to work around, I think, the NBA. But they were the tertiary. And so that meant, you know, the building not being available sometimes, having to play like back-to-back day games on the weekends at times is not conducive to NBA players' circadian rhythms. You know, and then they would just have to have like, you know, you maybe go on the road to like Denver, come home for a day, and then have to go to Houston or something like that, just because of the availability of the building. Right. So, like, you wonder how many, I think schedule could cost the Clippers 2-3 games a year in the past just because you get some bad breaks and some funky back-to-backs and some weird travel just because you don't have control of your own building. You don't have preference in your own building. So I think it will help them, even though they started off with a bad schedule, having to go Denver, Golden State back-to-back, but they won both those games. Mm-hmm. So that's one of their hardest stretches is already out of the way. Although I'd rather do it that way than go like Golden State, Denver back to back, right? Time and altitude and all that. So I think you'll see it just over the course of the season. And they didn't get the win, but you heard players on Phoenix say what a difference it made and how Absolutely. It affected their free throws shooting into the wall.
The wall. And
Vinny, it just sounded different, right? Just watching that game on TV, well, you were in there.
Yeah.
Tell me what it sounded like. But I will tell you, like on TV, it just had a different sound to the point that they're going to have to adjust the audio mix. On ESPN, I could barely hear the announcers because the fans were so loud. And they're going to have to adjust the audio mix to turn down the crowd and turn up the announcers if you're going to try to hear what they say.
It's funny. I had a different feeling for like the first three quarters. It did not feel from the inside like it was such a rollicking atmosphere. It didn't feel like that. I think where ESPN's mics were closer to the wall.
Okay.
And where media sits is kitty corner to that. So we are as far away from the wall as anybody in that building. Now, late in the game and in overtime, you got to feel it. You got to feel the size of the crowd. You got it because it wasn't a sellout, right? But you got to feel the weight. You got to feel like the weight of the building, I guess you could say, late in the game. And even on the floor, J.A., everybody's writing this team off. And I'm not saying that they're going to be any level of, like, contender. But they ain't going to be an easy win. Like, you better pack your lunch playing with them at this stage. Like, no Kawhi Leonard. You know what that means? That means you don't have to ask yourself the question of when is Kawhi going to play. Like, you know he's out indefinitely. I don't think we're going to see him play more than 40 games or 50 games a season. If he plays 50 games in any season for the rest of his career, I would be shocked, right? You got James Harden back into his natural role of high usage. I'm controlling the pace of play for 40 minutes or whatever it is. Like, the shooting numbers aren't great. He's only shooting 36% from the field, and he's had some bad turnover nights. He's averaging 6 a night. But 25, 11 assists, 8 rebounds, that means he's getting it off the glass and dictating pace. And he's feeding Zubats, who's averaging 23 and 13 right now. Norman Powell's averaging, I think, 25 and shooting 40 from 3. And I've said it before, J.A., Tyronn Lue, for my money, J.A., Ty Lue, best pound-for-pound coach in the game.
Yeah, period. In our Clipper conversation, I was going to start with that name, Ty Lue, because he's the one constant, right? And yep. He's gotten them through. He's had to navigate not having players available, just did it last year. And the Clippers are always at a place that you don't expect them to be, given their injuries. Why? Because Ty Lue was coaching them, and the players believe in him. The administration believes in him. So that constant, that Ty Lue factor, when he said he had a good feeling, you have to believe him. God knows what he's doing. He knows what he's talking about. So I've learned to trust in Ty Lue when he says things and to think that a team with Ty Lue as coach is always going to do better than you expect. Ty Lue kind of leads the league and like, what is this team doing here? And I think the answer, you pointed him.
Pound for pound, best coach in the game. Don't know how the Lakers didn't hire him, but hey, pound for pound, best coach in the game. Now, going to pause for a moment, pay some bills. We'll be back with more overreactions from week one of the NBA season with J.A. Donde. Back here with J.A. Donde, we're going to do more overreactions. This is a really fun one because I have thoughts on this one, J.A. The Boston Celtics have broken the NBA the way that dynasties do, and it's going to take a major injury on their team to stop a repeat championship. Is that an overreaction?
Yes. I'm sorry. It's not an overreaction. Yes, you were correct in that assessment of them. Maybe I'm prisoner of the moment, but I feel like if you were going to get them, the time was last year when they weren't sure of what they were doing. But now that they know, hey, we can win this way, we can jack up all the threes we want, and we'll still be standing on the stage heralding the Larry O'Brien trophy when it's all said and done. We've seen it's given them more confidence, right? I am so sick of the, oh, Jason Tatum didn't play in the Olympic Games and he's going to be mad.
I'm so
like,
tired of
I
that
can't
conversation.
Stand that. Like, let's move on. It okay, we had it opening night. Guess what? Now we're into the 2024-25 NBA season, and what took place last year doesn't matter. The last time he was wearing that green jersey, he won a championship, right? So, I mean, obviously, it's funny because the first game I'm watching, they get off to that great start on threes against the Knicks, and you're like, all right, they're going to cool off. And they didn't cool off until it was over, and they were just jacking up trying to get the record. Mm-hmm. So, like, they had three quarters without cooling off, and it built up such a substantial lead that it didn't matter. So you wonder, is the off going to come? You know, like, it barely happened during the playoffs last year, right? They'd had, like, one bad game. So yeah, if you can only have one bad game out of seven, you can't be beat. You know, you would think it'd be like every other game, it's kind of a crapshoot.
You think it's more variance. Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, I don't think it's that variance. If this is how they play and they're custom and they're comfortable and they can get better with Porzingis, then I don't see this team losing. Right now, just here's my overreaction. Celtics over Thunder in five in the NBA Finals.
Well, that it's time. Let's just talk
that's
to
my,
Thunder.
That's my first week. Way too early. Finals call.
Let's talk Oklahoma City Thunder. They were next after this. Ooh. After my Golden State point. But let's talk OKC. Ooh. Since we here, we here. The Oklahoma City Thunder are ready to play in June right now. Clearly, you are saying that is not an overreaction.
No, these boys are ready. I mean, the fact they had the best record last year.
Mm-hmm.
The time to get them was game one when they were playing against the Pelicans, and they had that team playing in his first playoff game look, and they still won that game, and then they handled their business, and okay, they got in the second round, and as expected, right? They mm-hmm. weren't ready. Mm-hmm. They were too young. Young teams don't win. Yep. They're still, I think, too young to get to the finals, but I just don't see anyone getting them. You know, I think Denver looks like they've taken another step back.
A huge one.
Yeah.
A huge step back.
And I think they're just too young and fresh and got too much for the Lakers. If we're going to be impressed by the Lakers, I'll be up impressed by them up until they got to go against Chet and Shea and them dudes. Right?
Hey.
I'm impressed by Chet Holmgren.
Chet is real. Chet went out there and kicked Nikola Jokic's ass on opening night. Blocked his stuff inside, ran the floor while Jokic was complaining to the officials, came down the lane, two-hand dunk. When I saw that, I was like, oh, we have a problem. there's this clip of Irv Gotti telling a story about 50 Cent. And of course they, you know, had that whole rap beef. You guys will get it. I'm sure you guys will catch up if you don't. But he was saying the first time that he heard the song in the club, and he was like, oh man, he's with Jimmy Iovine, Eminem, and Dr. Dre. And he was like, okay, the beat is cool. Let's see if he puts the lyrics together. And in his voice, he's like, let's see if he puts the lyrics together. I'm not sure if he's going to connect the dots. And then 50 was like, you feel me in the club? And he was like, oh boy, buckle up. We have a problem. That's what I say to the NBA about Oklahoma City. Because they don't even have Isaiah Hartenstein on the floor yet. You've got Chet Holmgren playing the five when they want him playing the four. Buckle up. I think the fact that we got Victor Wembanyama in the league, we've forgotten about Chet Holmgren and how good he could be. Now, granted, that's Gonzaga. And granted, that's a skinny dude who did not play at all his rookie year. But he did work last year. He did good work on a team that is filled with young players and draft picks. And now these kids are growing up really, really quick. They beat Denver so bad, J.A., it looked like they were playing 8-5. It legit looked like they were playing at a different speed than Denver on Denver's home floor.
At the altitude.
And right, that's not even your home floor. And that's that exactly. So I think Oklahoma City, if they want to, can easily get past 60 wins this year in a stacked Western Conference. I think they are going to be the clear, okay, you got to beat us team to get to the finals. I'm not saying they're going to get to the finals, but I think they're the team that you're looking at. Oh, man, we got to beat them.
I feel comfortable saying I can advance them into the finals, right? Obviously, there's a lot pending, but this team, and as you're right, they don't even have Hartenstein out there. So you get him, they're even more formidable. But again, I'll say the same with the Celtics, with Porzingis.
Mm-hmm,
if they get to the finals, the Celtics will have been there. This group will have been there for the third time. And I think that would prevail over OKC. So they're coming. And I heard you talking about this. Like, get ready to spend a lot of time in OKC with those non-direct flight. Like, I can't believe there was not a direct. Maybe this has changed since I covered their series. But when I did Spurs Thunder, there was no direct flight between San Antonio and Oklahoma City. And wouldn't you think, like, two oil-based places, you'd have a direct nonstop? Like, you had to go through Houston or Dallas. So, we could see OKC and San Antonio in some conference finals for years. Like, all those times we saw Lakers and the Spurs, you know, during the Shaq, Kobe, Tim Duncan, Ginobili, Parker eras. Like, we could see that coming up with Vic and Chet and them dudes, SGA. You name it. Like,
in the last few years, I was going to say, the last few years, Jay, I've been covering the Western Conference playoffs. You know what I'm going to volunteer to cover this year? The Eastern Conference playoffs.
But what's this? So Boston, I mean, you better hope it's New York.
Boston, New York. I'm not a believer in Philly. Like, Philly has to do it for me to believe in it. But I would not be surprised if it's Boston and New York. Or Boston.
Miami.
I mean, look, I'm always down to go hang out and, you know, hang out on Collins Avenue. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong with hanging out on Collins Avenue.
I think those days are done for a while. You think you'll be back in Milwaukee? Which means Chicago? Last time we had a finals dinner, we were in Chicago because the finals are right up the road in Milwaukee. I'm always rooting for the Bucks because that means at least one night all y'all are coming down to Chicago.
Look, man. Hey, don't be telling people our spot. People going to show up looking for us. But if the finals are in Milwaukee, you know where I'm staying? I'm staying in Chicago. I will drive that 90 minutes every day. Practice games, whatever. I will do all of that.
I once covered a Magic Pacers series, the middle games in Indianapolis. I stayed in Chicago And then that 4-hour drive back and forth. So you could definitely do that 90-minute or 2-hour drive from Chicago to Milwaukee. Yeah.
And they got a train. No, and they got an Amtrak from Chicago, from Union Station to Milwaukee. Can definitely do that. Now, we talked about all these, you know, future champions and current champions, but let's talk about past champions. That's our last point. Golden State, is it back to strength and numbers for now? Is it back to championship contention for them? Steph Curry's ankle injury aside, like, it looks like he'll miss a little bit of time. I'm not sure how much, but he looked like he turned it pretty good. But this doesn't look like the old Steph Curry ankle injury from 2012, where, you know, he's going to be playing 23 games or something like that. Are you a believer in Golden State in this current iteration that has sort of flipped the roster a little bit over the past year or so?
I wish I felt better about his ankles, but the fact that he kind of hurt it on the same thing with just a roll, not even stepping on anybody. It just, you know, he couldn't plan on it. Like, the stability wasn't there. It just, you know, just trying to make a cut, and it just rolled in like the exact same way twice is bothersome to me. Even if I guess they're saying it's not that bad of an injury, but it's bad that his ankle just didn't have that stability. So that's concerning. The other thing is, I just don't know about them beating up on Portland and Utah and then losing the Clippers. You know, even when Steph was out there, they weren't doing a whole lot against the Clippers, playing on a back-to-back off a nice victory in Denver that the Clippers just had an answer for everything Golden State threw at them up until, you know, the end when Steph had to go out for good. So I'm not sold on them yet. I want to see them against some better competition. I want to see them on, you know, nice long East Coast road trip, which was traditionally when they would come together and show what they were made of. So let's see on that. But I thought them and the Lakers would be about the same, and I'm a lot more impressed by the Lakers so far than I have been by the Warriors. So I would love to see them in the mix again. I just don't think it's happening.
Yeah, I need to see a lot more. But the one thing I am encouraged by is Buddy Hield coming off the bench, averaging 20, taking 8 threes a night and shooting 50%, like it seems
and Wiggins.
Yes.
Right? I know he's dealt with a lot. You know, he's not been very public about what he's been through, but I know he's been through a lot. Can we say things are resolved? Can we say things are better? He's certainly playing like a man that is less burdened. Mm-hmm. So if we're getting the Wiggins that we got during their 2022 playoff run, then that's a different version of the Warriors, and we have to account for that.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say that for sure, because if I'm banking on you playing an entire season like you played during one singular playoff run, that's not a big enough sample size. It's a sample size for me to say, oh, you can do it in the playoffs. It's not a big enough sample size for me to say you're going to do it over 82 or over how many other games you play. That's a little tough for me. I'm a less of a believer in Golden State and what they can be than I am in Boston or Oklahoma City. I'm pretty damn sure about both of those teams. Golden State, especially with Steph's injury,
State
I need to see more.
In the categories with those other
teams. Just even Boston, the premise of them being that of believing what you're seeing. Not even putting them in the championship category, but just believing what you're seeing and seeing that this is something that is sustainable, that this team can go beyond, 46 wins and the 10th seed in the play-in last year. Like, I think that's probably right about where they will be, even if you get a Steph Curry season like you got last year and, you know, reasonable health. I just don't know if you have enough high-level players that can get you the wins here or there that you're going to need. Now, granted, the margins are really thin, J.A. It ain't that big of a difference between a 46-win team and a 50-win team in the NBA. And it's almost a miracle that Steph Curry dragged that team to 46 wins last year anyway, right? But to ask him at an older age, where I think he's turning 37 in March, to say, okay, Steph, do it by yourself with no other star and win 4 to 5 more games in a tougher conference, that's a little tougher for me to buy in. But we're going to take our last break, and we're going to go with the last word on the other side of the good word here with J.A. Adonde. Back here on the last word, J.A. Adonde here with you. J.A., I'm curious what you think about this, because I've watched the first week of the season and I'm ready for some wholesale change. Eliminate the corner three, move the three back a couple of feet, whatever it is, it's too many threes. And Boston on Twitter, for whatever reason, Boston has looked at this and says, you are taking a shot at us. hey, Boston is just angry and mean like every damn time. Like, y'all should be happy y'all won something. Ain't nobody talking about y'all. I'm talking about the game as a whole. Like, as someone who is a fan of basketball and where the game is going, evolution, everything else, I don't want to see teams taking 55% of their shots from three-point range. I want to see guys get to the lane. I want to see the post-up. I want to see the mid-range. I want to see diversity in basketball. And for some reason, J.A. Adande, Boston got their panties in the bunch.
Well, they do take it as a front because they're all in on this, right? Their whole basket is we're going to take a lot of threes. We don't care if they're not falling. We know that the percentages, the odds, the numbers, the analytics are on our side. So just keep putting up those threes, and that's our path to victory. And again, they just were validated with it last June. But, God, the aesthetics of it are so difficult to watch. And it does something about it intrinsically. Like, I can't take you seriously when all you're doing is coming down and putting up those threes. Like, you might be good at it. Jason Tatum certainly seems like he's been in the gym working on it ever since he got back from Paris. So you can do it. It's not aesthetically pleasing. I was watching the game the other night. I think it was a Clipper game. Come down, take a three, miss. Rebound, kick it back out, another three. Like, I don't want to see that over and over again. And the problem is there's so few counter to it, right? Everyone's trying to do the same thing. Like, it was fun. You know what I love? I love those when the Warriors were first coming up, Warriors versus Grizzlies, when it was the Warriors trying to do
styles
this new
make
ways.
Fights.
Right. And then the Grizzlies grit and grind. We're not taking threes. We're going to post up Z-Bo on you and see what you can do about it. Like, I like that contrast. And when everyone just comes down and shoots threes, it's funny. I almost talked about this in my speech because you had so many of the 80s Lakers in there. But, like, I want to sound too grumpy, old man. But to me, a fast break is Magic coming down 3-on-2 and dishing to Worthy or Byron Scott or Cooper for a dunk. It's not somebody coming down, everybody fans out to the three-point line, and they cast up a three, you know, that you can get at any point as opposed to a transition layup or dunk. And so that's what I miss. The basketball I grew up on, and yeah, I'm sounding every bit of my now 54
it's
years.
It's fine. It's fine. They need to hear it. They need to hear it.
I liked seeing that. And when you come down and take a three on a fast break, you're not taking advantage. That's not an advantage to take a three. Again, if you're just going to shoot from 30, you can do that at any point. But how about you take advantage of the numbers? You know, we want to talk about analytics. The numbers, three versus two, that increases the chance you'll get a high percentage shot at the basket, right? What happened to those data, the analytics? That's all the data I ever need. Like, I know now we're into 3 points is more than 2 points, three versus two. I'm used to 3-on-2. Magic's going to find somebody. I'm going to draw two to me, or you got the guy in the back. One's got to commit to the ball. The other defender has to pick one.
Yes.
And guess what? 3-on-2, the numbers game, we're getting a layup or a dunk.
Easy.
A high percentage shot. That's analytics. Easy. That's math to me. Like, I don't have anything against analytics or math. I get math. I've always been a percentage, though. Highest percentage rather than volume. You know, it's turned into playing the percentages and to turn into volume, right? And I always say the problem with this approach, what's the enemy of analytics? The small sample size. What is a playoff game? A small sample size or even a playoff series. Is not an indicative sample size, right, to validate your point. Now, getting back to our earlier point, the Celtics very well might have broken it to the point that they're going to be so voluminous with their threes that they're going to be able to absorb. If they shoot 15% from three, well, 15 out of 50 is still 45 points from three, right?
Right.
So maybe that's their answer.
I don't get it, Jay. Like, and once again, this is, maybe this is going old, man. I don't care, y'all. I don't care. I legit, J.A., I don't care. Like, I looked at the numbers earlier. I'm going to quiz J.A. here, right? J.A., because you bought the 14-15 Warriors, and I did some homework. I did my research. This is the season where you're supposed to do your research, not just on basketball. Do your research, right? So in 2014-15, the first year of the Golden State dynasty, how many threes do you think Golden State took a night?
I know that whatever they did then that was leading would be like bottom half now, right? If not,
not bottom
even
half.
Lower, last.
Bottom.
Right? Bottom.
Lowest.
Right? The bottom.
They took 27 threes a night in 2014-15.
And that would be last in the league.
31%. 31%. Yeah, that'd be last in the league today. The lowest is 28, and that's the Spurs of this year, who's shooting 36% from three. 31% of their shots in 2014-15, when we thought Golden State was just an abomination against the game, and 31% of their shots came from three. The next year, when they broke the league, right, 73 wins, they took 31.6 threes a game. 36% of their shots came from three. Then you add Kevin Durant, the greatest offensive nuclear weapon we've probably ever seen, right? They took fewer threes. They took 31.2 and shot 35 and took 35% of their shots came from three. Now you go, you fast forward, J.A., to 21-22, the improbable Steph championship, right? 39 threes a game. 45% of their shots came from three. That's a wow. pretty high number.
And they probably shot a lower percentage, right? They probably made a lower percentage of them, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they made a lower percentage, right? Think about the numbers I'm about to give you for the Celtics. The Celtics take 51 threes a night on 91 shots. So they're literally taking more than half, far more than half. That's like 56%. If my miniature math is correct, I feel like that's between 55 and 56% if you're taking 51 threes on 91 shot attempts. Now, granted, they are hitting it at an incredible clip, okay? Like, all those guys are hitting big numbers, right? Like, Tatum is at 46% or 48%, excuse me. Jaylen Brown's at 46. Derek White's at 44. I'm not saying it's not effective, and I'm not saying it's not efficient, but I don't watch basketball for efficiency. I didn't fall in love with the game for efficiency. I fell in love with the game because the game just looked different. The game was beautiful. The game had all these other different elements to it besides let's try to get the three. And Boston, if y'all get mad at that, too damn bad. All right, period. Too bad. I don't care. But I'm not bashing Boston because Boston won a championship that year, and you should. Like, I'm a child of the Bad Boys. Nobody liked the Bad Boys except for people in Detroit. They didn't like the Bad Boys style of play, but because Detroit won, of course, we're going to embrace it. So I understand it from a provincial standpoint.
Knicks started playing that way.
Yeah.
Cleveland started playing that way in the 90s. Right.
The Knicks were lauded for playing like goons and thugs, and they didn't win shit. The Pistons won championships, and I felt like New York was embraced for things that Detroit did, but did better. I felt like all of a sudden we became an NBA that embraced losers.
I will say the 30 for 30 treated the Pistons right, because when that 30 for 30 Bad Boys come, everyone was like, oh, man, I love the Bad Boys. Oh, man, this was so great. This is the basketball I love. And I was like, no, you didn't. You hated them. Like, don't act like you like them now. You didn't love them. Like, I'm sorry. No one outside of Detroit loved the Pistons back in the day. But then the nostalgia comes around. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, I love the Pistons the way they played.
No, you appreciate it in hindsight. That's what
you know.
Is,
you know what I appreciated? I appreciated, and I never thought about it from their perspective, the climb. The fact that, you know, they had to fight through the Celtics, and then they finally get there and they lose the Lakers, and then they had to fight all the way back and come back and win. Don't say that word. That banner is just as legitimate as all those other banners of hanging up there back in the Forum back in the day. But
Hugh Evans.
But
I know your name.
You know, I appreciated the climb
more
when I watched that 30 for 30. And you know who I appreciated? It's funny, being at the Hall of Fame and seeing Larry Bird, and he was very nice. He came up and congratulated me first, and then I stopped him. I said, you know, I was rooting against you growing up in L.A., but I've realized I need to thank you for providing that challenge for the Lakers. Like, the Lakers championships wouldn't have meant as much. The competition wouldn't have been so great if Larry Bird hadn't been so great. If, you know, that whole Celtics team, Red Auerbach, all that made the Celtics, all the people in L.A. loathed and despised. But guess what? That made everything better. That made life in L.A. better because there was this great rival. I mean, one thing I've learned from, like, the Last Dance podcast that I did, Beyond Last Dance, is Phil Jackson would talk about, you know, the appreciation for your rival and even the love and the embrace of your rival. So I'm actually glad I had the chance to tell Larry Bird that, you know what, looking back now, I'm thankful for you. I appreciated you, you know, and so we should do that. I don't know if we'll appreciate these Celtics for what they've done to the game. But yeah, you should look at your rival and appreciate it. You should appreciate the Lakers and the Celtics and the Bulls back in the day.
I do, Jay. Look, there is nothing more satisfying, and not like vanquishing your rival, but the level of competition, you know, raised in such a way that Michael Jordan's on the other side. We have to be at our absolute best. That's the thought. We have to be at our absolute best to overcome him, because whether he's the greatest of all time or not the greatest of all time, whatever it is, but him as a flesh and blood basketball player, we got to bring it, because he's going to bring it. So he brings out the best and sometimes the worst in the guys that he went against. So, no, I have a great appreciation for those Bulls teams. I loved those series. Like, the fact that the competition was so very fierce. Like, the Pistons had to go through the greatest of the greatest to get their championships, which is why Michael Jordan should have never said what he said about the Pistons before game four of the 91 Eastern Conference Finals, where he said they were bad for basketball and they didn't deserve their championships. Damn right I would have walked out on you, too. I would have. I appreciate Mike, but I would have walked out on him, too. You ain't gonna disrespect my rings. How dare you? Don't do that, Jay. That's disrespect, J.A. That's J.A. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the Hall of Famer, J.A. Adonde. We out. Thanks, Jay, for giving us some of his time today. Thanks to producer John and the entire team who works hard behind the scenes on this show. If you haven't already, please go subscribe to the Good Word with Goodwill podcast on Apple and on wherever you get your podcasts, especially Spotify, which is where I usually go kick it. Leave us a rating and review. Give us, you know, the usual 5 stars. And there's been some good comments there, so we appreciate it. I'll be back on Wednesday with another episode of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.